Hello and welcome to The Front Page, the show looking back at all the top stories from the racing world. My name is James Stevens, your host for today, and joining me in the studio is our deputy industry editor, Pete Scargill. And we have a special guest from Ireland, David Jennings, the familiar face of the Racing Post. And it is to Ireland where we start with our leading story, because, of course, last week we said farewell to one of the modern racing greats in racing, in Rachel Blackmore, who retired after a stellar career. Winner of a Gold Cup, the Grand National, the Champion Hurdle, the Champion Chase and the Stayers Hurdle. She's leading rider at the 2021 Cheltenham Festival. And more than that, she was a trailblazer and a pioneer for the sport. David, talk to us about Rachel Blackmore. What a stellar career she had.
First things first, I could have killed her last Monday, though, because I promised Eve, Aoife said to me, she said, are you definitely able to collect the kids this evening? And I was like, yeah, honestly, I'm way ahead. I have all my stuff in and I was on a new shift on Monday. I said, everything is fine. I said, I'll definitely be there before 5 o'clock to collect them. And then 4:45, I think it was, on Monday, I was like, oh my God. I was like, Aoife, you're going to have to collect them. I can't collect them. I couldn't believe it, to be honest with you, because there had been so many potential exit points, be it Cheltenham, Aintree, Punchestown, like Bob Olinger, she could have retired on in the Stayers Hurdle, like, and she didn't. She chose a Monday in May when, there was very little going on. So I think her retirement actually, in a lot of ways, almost sums up her riding career in a strange sort of way, because from a journalist's point of view, I wanted her to be a rock star. I wanted her to be Frankie Dettori, and she was that. She had that appeal, especially to people in Ireland and to girls, given what she had done. And I was always mad for her, like, to deliver these killer quotes, and like, I wanted her to be this amazing rock star. But she just wanted to be a jockey, and she never wanted to be that rock star while she was riding. And I think the fascinating thing now is that we could see a whole different side of Rachel Blackmore now, because I think the next kind of 10 years of her life are going to be massive. Like, she could be anything, and she's got such a wonderful personality, and she's got such charisma, and she just appeals to so many people that next 10 years when she's out of the weighing room, because I think she always, she did it very well in that when she was riding, her job was to be a jockey. That was her job, to ride winners, to ride big winners, to ride Cheltenham winners. She was Henry de Bromhead's first jockey. And unbelievably, she managed to maintain her focus on being a jockey while there was all this outside noise happening. She didn't go down that route of a Frankie or this rock star, as I would say. Instead, she said, no, I'm going to be a jockey first and foremost. I'm not going to go into all that outside stuff. I'm going to be a jockey. And boy, did she, like, become this amazing jockey. Like, it's extraordinary what she's done in her career. And actually, just for when she did retire, went back, because I've interviewed her many a times, and I went back to her, the first ever time I interviewed her was January 2014, which is obviously not that great at maths, but I think it's 11 years ago. And there's just a quote here, which is quite interesting. She's talking about Shark, and I said, well, what are you doing? It was for the point-to-point supplement in the Racing Post, and I was doing an interview with her for the point-to-point supplement. And this is just two of the quotes in that piece. I said, what are you doing at the moment? She says, I'm with Shark full-time at the moment. I'm in with him 7:30 every morning. I finish at 4:30, and I'm trying to study for an exam, so I need to cram in the evenings. I don't mind getting up early and going riding out at all, because I don't see it as a job, as I enjoy it so much. And this next line, I'm fully aware that riding horses isn't a long-term thing, and it's only the top of the top that can make a proper living out of it. So I just have to keep my head down and keep studying. I enjoy equine science. I started off doing science in UCD, but I just couldn't handle the maths. Which I thought, when you think about it, listen to that line again. I'm fully aware that riding horses isn't a long-term thing, and it's only the top of the top that can make a proper living out of it. Well, she was the top of the top, James.
And she joins the group of Ruby Walsh, AP McCoy and Barry Geraghty to win all those big races at Cheltenham, which is the top of the top, as you rightly say. You mentioned there about rock star quotes, David. Let's go back to the Grand National, the race which has such an appeal. I don't feel male, I don't feel female, I don't even feel human. that's about as a rock star as quote as you get, don't you? That was such an important moment, not just for the sport, but such a wider sporting moment. So much so, she won the World Sports Star and the only person from Ireland to have won the BBC World Sports Star at the Sports Personality of the Year Award. Usain Bolt, Pele, Roger Federer, Muhammad Ali, Tiger Woods, Rachel Blackmore. That's top quality company to be in.
Yeah, I think our Ireland editor, Richard Forrestal, summed it up really well. Like, for somebody that was kind of, didn't want to be that person, her quotes were unbelievable. Like, when you think of it, like, I think there was three or four, you mentioned one of them there, I don't feel male or female, you know, I can't believe I'm Rachel Blackmore, all this kind of stuff. Like, her quotes were unbelievable, like, because she is such a, like, she is such an incredible personality, and, like, that what you just said there just sums it up perfectly. And like, it's where she came from. I think it's the fact that she came from such a place that nobody really makes it. Like, so she wasn't a hugely successful point to point rider, she wasn't a hugely successful amateur, she wasn't a hugely successful really anything. And then she turned professional, and then all of a sudden, you know, Eddie O'Leary said it to Henry, and then all of a sudden she's riding for Henry, and then all of a sudden she's riding kind of big winners. And the one key point that I want to make is Cheltenham. And I was doing the tributes Monday after not collecting kids from creche. I was ringing around all different people to get quotes, and the three or four different people said, you know, Cheltenham. She rode that track. I remember chatting to Brian Atchison, and he said, there was Paul Town and Jack Kennedy and Rachel Blackmore. If the three of those rode in a race in Clonmel on a Thursday, she'd be the worst of the three. When they got to Cheltenham, she was the best of the three. And she just had this big game ability to just ride to the peak of her powers at Cheltenham. And every year, no matter what kind of form Henry de Bromhead's horses were in going into Cheltenham, the two of them just clicked every single year at Cheltenham. And I think it's just brilliant that her final Cheltenham Festival, Bob Olinger, she produced this awesome ride on Bob Olinger. Like, it was just a glorious way to finish her Cheltenham career. And I think we'll still be talking about Rachel Blackmore in decades and centuries to come.
I love how, DJ, you've still got that bit of shock about Bob Olinger winning at Cheltenham. Even if it's been some time, it still hasn't quite fully sunk in for you yet, has it? Pete, we're bringing you in. I mean, David mentioned some of the tributes there. JP McManus paid a really good tribute saying about how much an outstanding sports person she is, talking about the influence she's had when she's been into schools. Kenny Alexander, the owner of Honeysuckle, said Rachel Blackmore's the best thing to happen to racing in decades. I mean, these are some big words that are being said about her.
And they're right. They're absolutely right, because she was a trailblazer and she showed that female jockeys were capable of performing regularly and outstandingly in the biggest races, which, frankly, they don't get enough opportunities to do so. And this is like a real key moment for racing now. So you've had Rachel Blackmore and the success that she's had and the profile that she's had. But, you know, she's going to act as an inspiration for people coming through, right? But we can't just sit back here and bask in the brilliance of Rachel Blackmore and not use it as an opportunity to further female jockeys' inclusion in racing and in the biggest races. I mean, if you look at over here in Britain last season, in the top 100 jumps jockeys, there were three female riders, of which Lily Pynchon was the top at 61. So for a sport that spends a lot of its time championing how male and female riders compete against each other and we're unique in that sense and how brilliant it is, there must be some deep-seated issues still at play that doesn't allow female jockeys to perform as regularly in these big races. So Rachel Blackmore has been outstanding in that respect. Hayley Turner, who retired earlier this year as well on the flats. We can't allow this moment to just to all applaud ourselves and go, well, look at what we've been able to produce as a sport. We need to use this as an opportunity to further. And I'm sure what DJ was talking about in terms of the next 10 years that Rachel Blackmore's going to be going around, racing will remain part of what she's doing. And I'm sure she'll act as an ambassador for that. But it needs to, this can't be the high watermark. Do you see what I mean? It needs to be the point we jump off from to something better.
Because there's always been quite a fair percentage of women within racing's workforce. It's taking that next step, that sort of elite level. And also not just going to be a conditional jockey or an apprentice jockey. It's actually having enough rides, having enough winners to make it a sustainable living, which has been the issue in the past.
Of course. And, you know, look, you know, there's lots of male jockeys in the same position. I'm not saying that it's not difficult for anyone coming through, but you know, you look at the percentages, and despite all the successes of these brilliant female riders, they're still well within the minority, aren't they? So, you know, female trainers are as successful, they do, female owners, female breeders. So, as I said, she's been absolutely brilliant, Rachel Blackmore, and racing has been blessed by what she's been able to do. And, you know, the opportunities Henry de Bromhead has given her. DJ mentioned Eddie O'Leary pushing it forward. We need more of that. We need more proactiveness, and to give these talented riders the opportunity to shine at the biggest days. Because in the end, it's the biggest races that have got to make the impact for other people coming through.
It does. And it's timely that we're talking about someone who's going to really sell the sport to a wider audience, that we're expecting in the next few days, possibly on Tuesday as we record here on Monday morning, there's going to be a new multi-million pound marketing programme to promote the sport. The going is good, yes. Apparently. We're still waiting to hear what's going to go on, but are we going to approach this with caution? Are we going to look forward to it? Is this going to save the sport? Is it going to drive it forward? What's your Pete Scargill thinking, which is always...
Well, look, the first and foremost, they're putting a lot more money behind this than they have done previously. We all look back to Jermaine Janus and Everyone's Turf, which was the last big wide-ranging marketing campaign in racing. I think that was about $1.5 million. So this is, you know, more than double that, isn't it? So they're putting a lot of money behind it. It's small in comparison to other sports, but let's look in terms of our own area. So that's a positive. And Simon Michaelidis, who's the acting boss of Great British Racing, which is the marketing arm of the sport. He's unequivocal. It's going to be brilliant. We've scored fantastically. We're going to do amazing. It's going to change the sport for everyone. And look, I hope he's right. I do hope he's right, because they're targeting sort of people who might be interested in coming racing, or maybe go racing once a year. So, you know, being able to build those into more regular race goers, and, you know, in the end, people who engage in the sport more by betting and owning horses or whatever it might be. That has to be a good thing, doesn't it? In the end, we want that to happen. We don't want this to be a terrible thing. We go, we knew it would be rubbish. Once again, racing's shown itself up to be no good. But as Lee Mottershead writes in today's Racing Post online, and Lee's much closer to this than a lot of us are, we've had Premier Racing over the last 18 months or so, and a lot of the initiatives that were going to be used to promote Premier Racing, this great new product, never happened, and people were blocked, and obfuscation happened. So it fills you with a sense that history tells you it won't go great, but we shall wait with interest on what arrives this week and how that impacts. I mean, one of the things that we need to find out is how it's going to be measured, because they haven't given us a lot of information on that front. It's a lot of just blue sky thinking at the moment. But I mean, you go racing more than I do. You were at Newbury at the weekend, weren't you? I mean, big crowds at Newbury, big crowds over Christmas. I mean, big crowds at Newmarket for the Guineas meeting. So, I mean,
Chester as well, good crowds.
You know, there's scope for some things to progress here, surely.
There are definite signs. I do enjoy going racing, and I think as a day out, it is still such a brilliant leisure activity. There aren't many leisure activities out there that are as good as racing, but there's certain little pinch points, the small little details that I've got wrong. Price points, for example, it's constantly being told, aren't we, by readers, by fans who go to the sport, that price points are getting it wrong. Just sort of experience of customer experience of queuing, and the small things that make a significant difference to ruining the day rather than making it.
So it's off track as well as on track.
It's off track, and then as well as on track. I mean, small field sizes obviously are a huge frustration to people when you're sort of looking at odds on favourites and predictable racing. There's a whole lot of it, but in terms of marketing idea, it's about... I look back at how it's marketed in Japan from my experience there almost a year ago, and racing seems and it's sold, it's on the tubes, and it's sold as quite sexy and cool and sort of really driving who you want to do. It draws you in, and it's everywhere, and it feels a real part of society. They're funding it to make it seem that way. That's what I'd like to see more of, that rather than just it's a day out. They're selling the people as key parts of culture, almost.
Yeah, we got a freer summer this year because there's no Euros and no Olympics as well.
We do.
Whilst there's other activities that people will be engaging in, of course, like there is every summer, there should be a greater run at things to give more opportunity.
Exactly.
So, look, I'm waiting with interest, shall we say, But I say the points that Lee puts in this column, which is well worth a read, do just anchor expectations a little.
Never get carried away, Pete, do we?
No. Well, we leave that to Simon Michaelides. I liked his unabashed enthusiasm for it. It was, it was refreshing in a sense.
Good. Now, before we move on, I must give a shout out to The Story of Horse Racing, available in the Racing Post this week, in 20 races. So looking back at the key races, which define the sport through the history of time, potentially Manila Times might sneak in there. We'll have to wait and see. I've not seen the 20, but be fascinated to see some of the old history. We like the sort of the history of racing, how it's changed and years gone by.
The sport's built on its history, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Of course it is. So,
and that's got to be a key part of the marketing going forward as well.
What's your favourite race of all? This is completely off the cuff now. I'm going to catch you off guard. What's your favourite race of all time?
I'll let Pete go first.
Two races. No, I'm going to do this properly. Two races. When See the Stars, who's the greatest horse that's ever raced, won the Arc, and his brilliant performance under Mick Cannon to win that day, and the excellent commentary from Jim McGrath to capture all of that. And then just the sheer shock value of when Frankel won the Guineas. Mm-hmm. There was so much build-up about how he'd had a bad preparation and he was drawn the wrong side from his pacemaker, and the way he went like that and blew the race apart. So how about that, DJ? You can't catch me off guard, Sunshine.
Absolutely not. Bit of flat bias there, though.
What's yours, DJ?
2005 Champion Hurdle. Every time I watch it now, I just watch it in disbelief to see Carberry sitting there motionless halfway up the run. And I just remember standing in the stand that day, as you do in stands, you stand. And it was just the most surreal moment. I've never experienced a moment like it on the track. And Hardy Eustace and Brave Inc. at either side of him just flat out, and Carberry just ice cool. It was just the most remarkable thing I've ever seen. 2005 Champion Hurdle will always be my favourite race, even though I backed Archibald. What about you, James?
Mine's always biased. It would be Native River's Gold Cup in 2018. It was a big favourite of mine. It was a cracking race, and the hearty jumper, all determination, the flashy might bite, but he fended him off with all his resolution and all his determination.
I should say that Caldwell Potter winning the at this year's Cheltenham Festival is a close second to the 2005 Champion Hurdle.
Yeah, and to any viewers or listeners listening in, my eardrums are still just about recovering from being in the press room with DJ when Caldwell Potter was there. So, DJ, keep getting him in. I'm sure we'll look forward to up in the ante when he returns next season. Let's move on to the flat action now. And, we'll come straight back to you, David. Aidan O'Brien, he seems to be winning all the trials left, right and centre, but the one that mattered perhaps most didn't quite deliver.
Yeah, the only horse that hasn't won a Derby trial, I think, will win the Derby. I couldn't believe the reaction to the Lion and Winter's run in the Dante. Maybe people just don't read the Racing Post or don't listen to Aidan O'Brien, but obviously the market was very positive in the latter stage on the Lion and Winter. And I was watching this move go from like 7. I thought when he drifted out in the morning, 7-4 in the Dante, I said, this could go off 5-2. And instead it went the other way and went off 8-11. And maybe that was the lack of confidence in the opposition. But I've been talking to Aidan O'Brien about the Lion and Winter for the last 3 weeks. And every time you talk to him, he said, we just need to make it to the Dante. We need to just get some sort of a run into him. Because whatever he does in the Dante, he is going to improve a ton. And like he said this on the record, and he still goes off 8-11. And there's a couple of things here. The stuff at the start I didn't like and would worry me a little bit about the Derby. You know, he didn't take the whole build up to the race particularly well. And then that first furlong show was mental. Like, he was just so keen. I said in a piece that it was just like a teenager at their first disco. He was just rabbit in headlights kind of stuff. Looked like he'd never ran before. But I thought what he did from maybe 2.5 furlongs in to maybe a furlong and a half from the line just oozed class. And I was like, yes, that's the horse that I saw last season. That kind of middle part, that middle 80% of the race. I was like, yes, that's him. And even the reaction afterwards, I think Aidan was reasonably happy with it. He was obviously hampered at a crucial stage. Ryan accepted the situation, but he still wasn't beaten that far. And I think he is the most talented horse in the Derby, and I think he'll win it. Everybody thinks I'm mad because that's the reaction I got when I wrote the piece. So maybe I am mad. But when he went 7-1 after a race, I just thought that was the most ridiculous price. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. As regards the other ones, look, I genuinely think probably only two horses can win the Derby. I think it's Delacroix or Deline in Winter. And I think whichever one Ryan rides will obviously be the most likely winner. The winner of the Dante, Pride of Ours, was very, very good. Really good. But I don't think he'll win the Derby. As regards the other trial winners, didn't see anything really at Chester that I particularly like. Lamborn and Ben Kilimanjaro, not for me. Linkfield, the 1-2, the second horse, definitely better than the winner, but he needs to be supplemented. I doubt they will supplement him, especially if they run both Delacroix and the Line of Winter. Why would you supplement him? Like, and even the vibes I got from Maiden is that, you know, it's stage three is not going to be supplemented. So not convinced Ruling Court is an out and out stayer. And put it this way, if Ruling Court, obviously Ruling Court will run in the Derby, but like, they're not stupid in Ballydoyle. They'll know that we need to make this into a bit of a test for us kind of thing, you know, because we might have the stronger stayers and the better bred stayers than Ruling Court. So it won't be a sprint. So yeah, that's my view on it. I thought they're the two that I'd be very much a Line and Winter fan, and I think he's the most likely winner. And yeah, it's going to be fascinating, though.
Yeah, definitely. I like how David puts it, because there's no doubting the Lana Winter is a very, very good horse, but there's enough in that run where you could go, I can see the improvement. I can see him going to win the Derby. But at the same time, there's enough just greenness in it. Not some greenness, but keenness and elements to the way he races where you go, oh, I wouldn't want to go near him at Epsom. It's a classic sort of down the middle 50-50 sort of split, I think. But to go back to a point, bad runs before the Derby seems to be the trend, if you like trends. So,
well, this is it. I suppose the difference with Auguste Rodin and City of Trolls, they both ran in the Guineas,
yeah.
So they had more time before Epsom. And you know, given what DJ's talked about in terms of Aidan O'Brien's desperation just to get a run into him 3 weeks before, that is a slightly different equation, you would say, coming around this time. But I don't know. He ran a perfectly acceptable race, but it's one of these classic issues with horses of Aidan O'Brien's, is that the hype is so large around them,
yeah.
Your expectation is always incredibly high. So if they don't meet that,
has there been hype around him, though? I'm not sure there has. I think this is one that the hype has been quelled significantly, because usually when you have an unbeaten Ballydoyle juvenile going into their 3-year-old season, it's like, you know, advertisement central. I think with this guy, it's been very reduced compared to other years.
I don't disagree in that respect, but you would have to say that there's still been, you know, this was Aidan O'Brien's Derby horse. This was the big hope, wasn't it? He ran in the last. I'm not saying, you know, this is not City of Troy-esque hype, is it? It's not that sort of level.
No.
But there's always that tag with them. We're always waiting to see because of the sheer depth of quality they have.
Just to mention on the hype. Going over the winter, he'd won a Group Three in the summer. It's you can't hype a horse who've won Grade Ones in the fashion of City of Troy compared to he'd won a Group Three, and the form had worked out.
Sure, absolutely. Let's say it's not to denigrate anyone in particular, but these, say, the horses from Ballydoyle in particular, are always, there's a high level of expectation from us as the public about what they're going to do. So whether or not the hype machine and the marketing machine has got behind it, anyway. So I mean, there were definite things you'd put out of it that you didn't like, how hot he got beforehand and how keen he was, and the distance between the Dante and Epsom, that it's different to his previous runs. Pride of Arras was very good. I mean, Russell Ryan, who isn't the most ebullient character, when he talks well about Russell, but he's not the sort of guy that's going to get carried away. Couldn't stop him talking about that horse. Couldn't stop him talking. Matt Rennie, our colleague, spoke to him at York on Friday, and he was just glowing with enthusiasm about the horse. And Rafe Beckett's obviously won Two Oaks. He knows what to do. So you've got to put him right in the mix. And obviously, Ruling Court's there for the Triple Crown as well, which, you know, we've got a Triple Crown horse here at the moment. Why not? Why not? Why not have a Triple Crown horse in 3 weeks? You're a Triple Crown horse at the moment. Do I think he'll stay? Yeah, why not? Why not? I'm all in on the Triple Crown at the moment. So what?
I like it.
Why not? I mean, you know, justified a Derby winner last year. It's not a out and out middle distance family, but you'd say he's got as much. I mean, it's the same family as the Lion in Winter, I think. So if the Lion in Winter is going to stay, you'd think that ruling court would have a good chance of doing so. Really, back in the dimmer distant past, but he was good pride of Arras. He shouldn't be underestimated just because a lot of the focus has been on other horses in the race.
Yeah, for the Arc winning trainer as well, of course.
Of course,
flying form. Oaks, anything catch your eye? Has anything caught your eye over the last few weeks? Of course, Well was the winner of the Musa Dora.
Well was very good. Yeah, you couldn't knock her in that respect. But I mean, I think ultimately the horse they've got to beat is the horse that won the Guineas, isn't it? Desert Flower was so good, and the confidence levels behind that horse is so high. It's so high that DJ's even subconsciously put on a royal blue shirt today in his support of Desert Flower. So Charlie Appleby's winning the races that Aidan O'Brien isn't winning. Charlie Appleby's winning at the moment. There's no reason to think that she won't be better at Epsom than she was at Newmarket.
We'll give him the right to reply, shall we?
I should be wearing a darker shade of blue. I should be wearing navy because I fancy Minnie Hawk. Who is Minnie Hawk? Actually, is in a Magna or Derek Smith's colours? I can't remember. But yeah, I'd be a Minnie Hawk fan. They love the run of Chester, and again, there just seems to be a vibe that there's huge improvement to come, and she's bred to be pretty special too. And I thought she was dossing up the straight at Chester. I thought she had loads in the tank, and I would be very much in the Minnie Hawk camp. And I think the fact that Twirl bolts up in the Misadora, and then after the race they're going, "Oh, I don't think we're going to run in the Oaks," actually, you're kind of going, "Okay, what the hell have you got that's better than Twirl?" And I have a feeling that Minnie Hawk is the number one, because I think with Giselle, I just think she's feisty, and she's just going to be hard to manage, I think, at Epsom, whereas Minnie Hawk is just does everything so professionally. I think she is the one. I think she's still a big price.
And just whilst we've got DJ, anything else catch your eye for you to potentially ask Scott as well?
A massive day at Nace yesterday. I think it's probably the best card that Nace has ever had. And usually it's dominated by Ballydoyle, but this year it's dominated by our old buddy Ger Lines and Colin Keane and Babouche. Babouche must have a massive chance in the Commonwealth Cup now, because she was a brilliant juvenile. She beat the boys in the Phoenix Stakes. She beat Whistle Jacket, and she beat him again yesterday quite comfortably, I thought. I thought she was in her comfort zone the whole way. And given that Jarrah said that, you know, it's been so hard to get her fit, I'd say there's even more improvement to come from that run yesterday. So she was terrific. So she was. And that filly stakes, the Group 3 Lady Imam for Jarrah as well. Simply Astounding was obviously disappointing, but Green Sense was very impressive in the maiden at the Curragh. So that looked a proper Group 3, like, that is going to throw plenty of Group 1 winners. And Lady Imam, just, you know, 3 from 3, 5, 6 seems to come alike to her. She's just an absolute star. I think she's favourite for the Queen Mary now, possibly favourite for the Albany as well. So it's going to be an interesting decision to see where Jarrah goes. I think she's just quick enough for the Queen Mary, so I think they'll just go for the Queen Mary, and I'd say she'll be a short price favourite. So Jarrah Lyons has got a big Royal Ascot team this year, and I'd love to see it going really well, because he's a great fella. Like, he's a little bit of a Marmite character, because, like, he's so passionate, and I love him though. And, like, he just loves the game, and he's great for the game. And I would love, if Jarrah Lyons had a really good Royal Ascot with Colin Keane, I think it'd be fantastic for racing.
I certainly would agree. Pete, anything catch your eye? I should mention Lead Artist, winner of a Lockinge. I would fancy Rosalian to turn the form in the Queen Anne myself.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was excellent at Ascot last year, and clearly blew up on Saturday.
Yeah. You
clearly blew up. And yeah, don't disagree. Yeah, he clearly blew up at Ascot. Yeah, not Ascot, Newbury.
Yeah. Yeah, good.
And there was a nice Godolphin horse that won.
Yes, well. Trian Moore for Godolphin. That's what €2 million gets you. Definitely looks a two-year-old to watch.
For sure,
towards the Chesham, which they won with a certain Pinatubo on his two-year-old champion winning season. So watch this space. Final stories we'll look at, Pete. There is news in the world of racing tax.
Yes, tax, levy, media rights payments. It's the bit that everybody's been waiting for.
Everyone's been counting down for this bit, yeah.
So, you know, look, it's important stuff, though.
Yeah,
levy yield for the last 12 months in Britain was 108 million, which is the highest that it's been since the new mechanism came in 2017. So this is against the backdrop, of course, of punters having issues in terms of affordability checks, anti-money laundering checks, bookmaker restrictions. So it's a more hostile environment for punters at the moment, yet racing is getting a larger chunk of money from the punters than it has done for a while. So it's a situation that's been created by the way that the levy is raised. So it's raised on bookmaker profits, gross profits. And they were higher, partly because Cheltenham was so bad for punters. It came in higher than forecast because, you know, Gallop in the Champ, Constitution Hill, John Bonn, Te Hupu, for example, were all beaten. Madgeborough, all these hot shots that were beaten. So, say it's against the backdrop of a very hostile environment, dropping turnover, another 8% drop, the levy board said, in the last year. BHA figures for the first 3 months of this year show a 9% drop in turnover. So turnover is dropping. It's dropping fast, and we know the reasons why, which is why, you know, this continues to be a very important matter for the sports governing bodies. And obviously bookmakers are retaining their profits by withdrawing concessions and making it, you know, less pleasant for punters, you know, things like best odds guaranteed. So that is one thing that's happened, and sort of related to that was that Racecourse Media Group paid out £113 million to their racecourse partners. That's 37 racecourses, Jockey Club Racecourses, York, the likes. And that's pretty high, again, against quite the great significant headwinds that we often hear about. So racing is still drawing in good amounts of money from punters and bookmakers, but that's a mask to what's going on underneath, and which is why everything needs to continue pushing this position with the affordability checks and what have you that's going on. So that's one side of things that's happened in the last week. And the other side is there was a round table earlier in last week, I should say, in Westminster in London, where racing figures, some punters and a think tank got together to talk about taxation. Now, taxation isn't everybody's cup of tea, James, believe it or not.
Sadly not, no.
But the Treasury has put out a consultation in terms of potentially harmonising tax rates. And the big issue for racing is that racing's taxed at a lower rate, the general betting duty, which is 15%, against remote gambling duty, which is 21%. And everybody has this fear that if there's going to be harmonisation at a time when there's no money, you're not going to harmonise down, are you? You're going to harmonise up, which gives racing a problem in terms of having to pay more tax. So this round table got together, and there was the impression that there was perhaps a bit of a divergence between racing and betting. So racing and betting have been quite together through all of this, through the last few years with affordability checks and what have you. And it's different, but obviously in Ireland as well, with the issues they had over there, racing and betting very much together. Racing perhaps saying that, we can understand why games of chance are taxed differently to us. You know, please don't raise the tax on us. Now, the Betting and Gaming Council, which is the industry body for bookmakers, sort of said, we're still all in this together, which is there's not been a big schism opening up. But it's an issue that continues to engage racing's key players, and it's another issue that's open, and it's another one that if it goes the wrong way for racing, in inverted commas, it's going to affect the income for the sport.
Certainly is. Do we think that there is a chance that racing will be taxed differently than?
Well, that's the argument being put forward, and Martin Cruddas, who's the Arena Racing Company chief executive, was very much making this point. And James Noyes, who's the head of the head of the think tank that was part of this roundtable, he was saying that there's a good case for racing to be taxed differently due to the nature of betting and racing, that they're sort of coexistence. So the fact that racing relies so much on its funding from bookmakers and from punters suggests that if you're doing something to impact the take from bookmakers for racing, it's going to impact the sport more widely. And it's this unintended consequences thing, isn't it, that's been all the way through all of these discussions over the last 3 or 4 years. That if you do something over here, it's actually going to have a significantly larger effect over there.
Yeah.
And that's what I think racing is trying to make clear during this consultation period.
It's going to be an evolving situation. We'll have to watch closely.
Absolutely. And Bill Barber, our industry editor, as ever, is all over it. So yeah. If there is news, Bill will have it, which is reassuring for everybody.
Certainly is. Okay, that brings us to the end of the show. Plenty of good discussion. Thank you very much to Pete Scargill in the studio and David Jennings joining us from Ireland. David, I hope collections go well this week and there's no drama stopping you. Perhaps as big a story as the retirement of Rachel Blackmore. I mean, she's got to be on the front page, isn't she? She is the front page story for many, many times. So Rachel
Absolutely,
Blackmore,
she should be hailed as such.
She certainly should. Do join us again next Monday for all the latest discussion from the world of racing.